Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information about a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The missing five-year-old boy was found safe on the Oregon coast. Kids at a Vancouver athletic club have possibly been exposed to E. coli. And a Portland girls' lemonade stand gets national attention.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you...
Sorry.
I heard something just a second ago. I'm not sure what it was. There was a sound that came from somewhere in the studio.
It could have been my head slamming into a secondary microphone.
No, it wasn't that. Oh, it was that. This combination of things and stuff will render you verbed in all manner of things. Well, there you go. That's just a...
Today's show is already awesome.
Out of the gate, it's fantastic. All right, let me just continue this. There we go. Will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this... is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, August 6th, 2010. The five-year-old boy who was missing at a state park along the Oregon coast was found safe Thursday after an overnight search by a team of rescuers. A volunteer searcher and his teenage son found Isaac Glenn in some thick underbrush near the top of a high ridge not far from the ocean. The boy had some scratches, but quickly ate a sandwich and drank some water after being brought to the campground at Carl G. Washburn Memorial State Park, where he was reunited with his family. Pete Burrell and his son Mason, 14, said they heard a voice up a 400-foot ridge across from a creek about 1 p.m. Thursday and tracked it to the boy. Burrell said Isaac told him he had decided to go for a walk while his family was setting up camp, got lost, and decided to stay put until someone came to find him. Burrell said the boy probably did not hear searchers calling his name, whistling and ringing bells, because he was on the other side of the ridge. Health officials in Clark County have confirmed that a Vancouver child has a case of E. coli. The confirmed case is doing just fine, according to Dr. Alan Melnick. But health officials are concerned others may have been exposed to the bacterial infection after the child visited the supervised play area at Lakeshore Athletic Club in the 2400 block of Northwest 94th Street in the last month.
Dr. Alan Melmack?
Melnick.
Oh, that's less interesting. All right.
Sorry. We can call him Dr. Melmack.
No, it's fine.
It makes the story
I don't wish to alter the stories for the sake of humor.
The reason we're so concerned is that they are infected. If they are infected with E. coli, it can have nasty complications, said Dr. Melnick. It can be fatal at times. Melnick said more than two dozen kids and three staff members were showing symptoms compatible with E. coli. It's hard to say how many will be confirmed.
Isn't everything just the flu when they say that it has symptoms? Look, can we be honest? When they say symptoms, that just means pooping, right? It just means uncontrollable pooping.
Or it could also mean nausea and fever.
Well, okay, but it's things falling out of your... It's liquids shooting out of your body when you don't want them to or from places where liquids ought not emanate.
Basically the same, you know, as you get with any food poisoning. Or as people like to call it, 24-hour flu.
Is that what they call that?
Yeah, and there is no such thing as 24-hour flu. If you have flu-like symptoms that only last for 24 hours, you have food poisoning.
I was to understand that food poisoning was more, what's the word I'm looking for? It was more acute and unpleasant.
Food poisoning is incredibly common and happens to people far more often than they realize.
Really? So this is the rare disease that happens more often than people think, not less often?
Well, the thing is, there are I went to culinary school, and I had to take all these health courses.
About not serving me old potato salad
and whatnot. And we had to study a whole bunch of stuff about food poisoning and foodborne illnesses. And there are a lot of different bacteria that give you food poisoning to a wide range of degrees that can hit you anywhere from 24 hours to up to like 5 days or more after you ingest whatever it is. And yeah, you can just have like a mild fever and just a little bit of an upset stomach and not feel very well. Or you can go all the way up to the whole fever and shivering and diarrhea and stuff. But basically, if you feel really, really crappy for just like about 24 hours and then it goes away and it feels like you have a virus, there are no viruses that only last 24 hours. You had food poisoning.
All right, then. So I should probably not be eating stuff out of the back of my car.
Probably not.
All right.
Also, another thing that's interesting about food poisoning, while we're on the subject, people tend to blame the last meal they had. You'll be sick, like, say, in the evening, and you think about...
It was that Szechuan I had at lunch.
Right, and it's not. Pretty much all food poisoning, it takes 24 hours to gestate, or whatever it is, the word is that I'm trying to think of, in your system. It takes at least 24 hours.
I don't think it's gestating. I think that's something else altogether.
What is it called when bacteria does... I can't think of the word. Incubates.
Gestating is when you're sitting there eating the cornbread and the Nostromo, and then suddenly your rib cage expands.
Yeah, but the quickest ones take, 24 hours. So it's what you ate this time yesterday or before that.
Well, this is one of those things where I have to revise my thinking then, because food poisoning is like, here's a little insight into, it's just my worldview, is that I always believe, I think like a lot of people, I sort of believe that food poisoning, like food allergies, are just largely made up. That they're not, they're not really real. But food, so food allergies, way less common than people claim. Food poisoning, way more common than people think.
Yeah.
But that's only because they are ascribing it to being something else, because they think it's, again, I have some sort of a 24-hour bug, which is really just that you ate some bad cheese or something that you found in the back of the fridge that you ought to have left alone.
Yeah, but the thing is, people blame restaurant food and stuff like that, and the thing is they don't really think about what they're doing in their own kitchens.
Or that they're filthy people.
Yeah. If you do anything in your kitchen with raw chicken, you should clean the cutting boards, the counter, whatever, with some kind of a bleach
with
or something.
With a bleach solution, Don.
Yes.
That's what I do.
Because raw chicken is toxic.
I worked in kitchens, and not in any interesting capacity. I was just the guy who sat over there by the Hobart dishwashing machine and just slammed down the door 500 times a day, and then would just press the big power wash button. But the one thing that just drilled into us all the time is that bleach water solution, which you put on, you're supposed to use to clean everything, especially because I have this... For some reason, I have this, as much as I don't care about being trashy most of the time, I have this whole thing where I can't abide plastic cutting boards. They just seem, they make me feel like I'm just a big hee-haw, watcher. So at our house, we have nothing but wooden cutting boards. But Lara had never, because her parents didn't really ever cook, so she had never really had to learn any of this stuff. And so at one point she was like chopping up a raw chicken or something, and then I just saw her give it like a good wipe off with a paper towel, and then she just put it back on the shelf and was going to be using it the next day. And I was like, baby, you can't do that. You'll kill us all. So I was the chicken is one of those things that just I have probably a disproportionate fear of, because again, otherwise you just end up hurling uncontrollably into a trash can somewhere.
I actually have a separate cutting board that I use just for chicken. And I still clean it with a bleach solution, but I only use it with chicken. I won't use it with any
other. The hell is it with chickens? What is wrong with chickens?
Oh, we could spend so much time. It's because of the way they're farmed.
Really?
Yeah.
Is this one of those things? Does it all come down to poo? Is this one of those things where they're just raised in piles of feces?
Yes.
All right. Welcome to the lunch hour, by the way. You are listening to Legion of News. Don't forget, if you want to get this show on your mobile device, there's clearly something wrong with you in any number of levels that I cannot fix. But you can do that at mobile.pdx.com. FM, mobile.pdx.fm. And of course, the show is archived later on in the day at pdx.fm and at legionofnews.com, also at iTunes. The Rick Emerson Show is going to be coming up at 1 p.m. today. We'll have a Geek Watch, Taser Watch, a Job Watch, and more. Plus, the worst movie trailer in the history. Seriously, like since the invention of the kinescope, it's the worst movie trailer that's existed. And it's real. Apparently. Well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but that's coming up today at 1 o'clock. So we'll talk about that. This is Legion of News. Don Taylor is at the Legion of News desk.
Multnomah County Chair Jeff Kogan personally apologized Thursday to the mother of a 7-year-old girl whose last Thursday lemonade stand was shut down by county health inspectors.
Where was this? I know it was in Portland, but where? Does it say where? Was it a suburb? I'm willing
Northeast to... Alberta Street.
See, that surprises me, because this is the sort of thing that they typically have happen in, like, Bethany
It was actually at a street fair, which I think might be part of the problem.
Well, because never mind. I'll let you do the story.
Well, the girl didn't apply for the necessary health permit required by the county. For one thing, she's only 7 years old. Jeff Cogan said Multnomah County called it a safety issue.
Now,
lemonade.
Let's see, lemonade.
I don't think it's our biggest threat in the community is the proliferation of lemonade stands from seven-year-olds. But you know, having said that, it is the case the county's food inspectors are trying to make sure that people are safe.
So do they go up to I'm trying to keep myself on an even keel about it. Stories like this make me angry. I'm not for the reasons that everybody probably thinks. It makes me angry because, first of all, we have this goddamn story every summer. Every summer.
Do we?
Every summer in every one of the goddamn 50 states. We have a story about heartless county officials came and shut down a young girl's lemonade. It is 2010. If you are not aware at this point that the county will come close down your kid's lemonade stand, you have been living in a small metal box on Venus. So... secondly, the story makes it sound as though the guys from the county, it's not like I hate children or something, but the story always makes it sound like the guys from the county come up and manacle the girl and stick her in the brig somewhere. I doubt that they came up and they talked to the girl herself. They probably came and talked to her parents, who I hope were on hand. They probably just took the parents aside, or they should have, and just said, look, like your kid can't be having this because if somebody comes over and drinks some of your kid's juice and gets sick, then they're going to be suing the city. And then guess what? Then Rick Emerson gets to pay for it. It is always depicted as though the girl is being dragged off, like some sort of a protester in Selma or something, which is probably not the case. Also, it's at a street fair, which means there were any number of adults around who probably should have, used some common sense and figured out you can't just be selling food without a permit, whether you're 7 years old or not, and that her parents ought to have known that. All right, I'm sorry. Anyway, I'll let you go ahead.
Julie Murphy's mom, Maria Fife, said that her daughter broke down and cried when she found out about the red tape keeping her from selling lemonade.
You know what? Welcome to life, friend.
We didn't have a vending license, and apparently it costs $120, and I didn't know about that.
You know, it surprised me because she sounds really smart. So I'm stunned that the mom didn't know this. She seems like a really plugged into her world kind of woman. Let's listen again.
We didn't have a vending license, and apparently it costs $120, and I didn't know about that, so $120 to sell 50-cent cups of lemonade. I absolutely absurd.
It's absurd is
it's
what
absurd.
It is. It's absurd. Have more kids, please, and vote every election.
I'm trying to wrap my head around the idea that she... It wasn't just that her kid was on the street in front of her house. She went to a street fair where, ostensibly, other people have food handler's licenses and have...
Yeah.
City permits and business licenses to sell things, and she thought that she could just sell things.
Well, that's just absurd. So there's just no way to refute that. Oh, god damn, people are stupid. I'm not talking about her, of course. I'm thinking about a cousin of mine. He's deeply stupid. She's Mensa.
Multnomah County Chairman Jeff Cogan kind of apologized.
I'm not sure that I have sound on this, do I?
No.
Okay.
He said, I don't think our biggest threat in the community is the proliferation of lemonade for seven-year-olds, but health inspectors are about keeping people safe.
Well, you just can't be going and just serving stuff, especially at a street fair, which is... I didn't even know it was at a street fair. I figured it was just the jive where the girl just wants to sit on the corner in front of her house and, lemonade for 25 cents because I'm adorable. And then you go by and you buy like a lukewarm cup of, sugar because you're going to feel like an ass otherwise. But it's at a street fair, which means that it was presumably put on by a neighborhood organization or the county or the city. Mm-hmm. There was some sort of community organization. In other words, there's a whole lot of people who would be held financially responsible if in some parallel world, not this one, of course, because I'm sure it's a whole family of smart people, in some parallel universe where maybe the kid didn't quite understand all the minutiae of food handling at the age of seven. and where somebody then got ill from ingesting something that she was serving and then thought, hey, I don't want to work. I'll sue the city for this. As because as you just noted, pointed out in the last story, that food poisoning is much more common than people think.
Yes.
Let's just hear the mother one more time, shall we?
We didn't have a vending license, and apparently it cost $120, and I didn't know about that. So $120 to sell 50-cent cups of lemonade, I absolutely absurd.
I wonder if somebody beat her with an encyclopedia, if some of the knowledge would somehow like osmose into her head. Probably not.
Yeah. You know that that guy like 20 feet away from you who's selling kettle corn got himself a damn permit.
My Dawn, that's just unfair. And I won't hear children talked about in that way.
I am not big on authority, as you know, and I'm not a big fan of the whole, bureaucracy that we have to go through for pretty much everything in life. But at the same time, there's a reason why if you handle food in any capacity in this county, you have to spend the $15 or what it is to go and get a food handler's permit. You have to read a booklet. You have to take a test, and it shows that you know not to, make sandwiches with poop on your hands and things like that.
What should I put this mayonnaise in? Where's the aluminum bowl?
Yeah.
You're not saying that the kid ought to have to do any of that, but just by hearing the mom use the collective pronoun we...
We didn't have a vending license.
It indicates to me that the mom was probably... but the mom was probably there.
Well, the kid's only seven.
Well, that's,
of course
see,
the mom
that's
was
what
there.
I'm saying. So it's not like I'm saying the kid's got to go off to, the Culinary Institute or something and just, but the mom has to understand this. And the mom, frankly, ought to be instilling in her daughter the idea that if one is going to... I know this makes me sound like Alex P. Keaton, but, that if you are going to comport yourself as a grown-up, that, there's just certain things you got to do. And frankly, I'm not like a big fan of authority either, which is why I'm not a fan of authorities having different rules for different people. That's why there ought to be one rule for everybody. And the man ought not be able to make exemptions at his whim, which is what he would be doing in this case. So, and also, I don't want to be paying out like $1 million if somebody goes and gets trichinosis from your kid's Kool-Aid. So that's just, I know it's an absurd assumption.
It's absurd.
We didn't have a vending license, and apparently it costs $120, and I didn't know about that. So $120 to sell 50-cent cups of lemonade, I absolutely absurd.
Yeah. And she's really fertile, too. You can just tell by listening to her. You can hear her ovaries just blasting out future children. God damn. All right. I'm so glad it's Friday. Really, I just am. I
was so cheerful when I came in here this morning.
I'll knock that right out of you.
I was ready to start this whole day afresh.
No, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to expunge all of that from your soul, Dawn. All right, here's Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Someone painted a fake crosswalk in a busy intersection in southeast Portland, and Friday the city erased it. Crews arrived at 9:30 a.m. this morning.
What?
A fake crosswalk.
Ah, okay.
Actually, I don't think it was a fake crosswalk. It was an actual crosswalk.
I mean, if you spray paint a crosswalk, it becomes a crosswalk.
Right. It wasn't an authorized crosswalk, I believe is what they mean to
say. Fake means it's not really there.
Right.
Yeah.
Crews arrived at 9:30 a.m. this morning with power sprayers and cleaned the white paint off the street. Portland's Bureau of Transportation has studied the intersection, and officials said they determined that a crosswalk was not necessary. Two crosswalks are within eyesight to the north of Sandy, providing a nearby crossing option.
Sandy and where?
I'm not quite sure. Southeast Ash, 10th, and Sandy.
Because Sandy deserves more and needs more crosswalks, everywhere. It doesn't matter. You could put them every 5 feet, and they wouldn't be numerous enough.
The crosswalk was painted by an anonymous person at the intersection of Southeast Ash, 10th, and Sandy, sometime between midnight and 6 a.m. Thursday. While it was clearly not a standard city-made crosswalk, pedestrians were seen using the path with regularity Thursday, even though the impromptu lines were difficult for drivers to see. The intersection has five corners, and traffic arrives from six different locations. Count Kellum, an apartment owner near the intersection, said he applauds the effort and would like to see the city respond with a real crosswalk.
Okay, so this is I have no idea how that intersection works, because I don't know how that can be 10th. This gives me a headache even to downshift to try to think about this. I don't understand. They're talking about that one... And everybody knows what I mean if you're in Portland when I say that one intersection on Sandy, where there's 100 different streets all coming together, and Burnside, and it's right as you get past Union Jacks if you're going east, and suddenly all the streets merge into one. I don't know how that can be 10th, by the way, if when you're closer to downtown, you're actually at 11th, which is where the Imago Theater is. That doesn't make any sense at all. I have no idea who designed the city. Just drunks and retards.
That whole neighborhood right there is just a death trap.
I am amazed that people aren't killed there all the time. My friend of mine, I won't give his name, but a friend of mine who, I think I told this story a few weeks ago, actually, he plowed into a guy who was just walking across that intersection. And there was no crosswalk. And a guy just sort of stepped off the curb and he went right in front of my friend's car. I'm just amazed that there aren't more deaths there, because I've lived here for 12 years and I still get caught there sometimes, especially now if you're coming the other way, which is something you don't have to deal with probably all that much.
Not much.
Because they've got it, you know, the street is being all torn up the opposite direction because of, I swear to Christ, an aqueduct. And I thought aqueducts were a thing we got rid of like after the Roman Empire. But, you know, what do I know?
An aqueduct?
You know who told me that? Thomas Gill. So that's a thing that I believe because a smart guy told me. So apparently there is, I swear to God, he said that there's some sort of aqueduct issue happening, which is why if you're coming the opposite way, if you're going west on Sandy, it sounds like we're doing a farming show here, and we're talking about like the best route to get your wheat to the market. But if you're going west on Sandy, they've suddenly made that intersection even more complicated by merging a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't merged with other stuff before. So it looks like it looks like on the Tonight Show when they used to do the Tea Time Movie Hour. And Carson would come out as Art Fern, and he would have that map of the Slauson cutoff, and it was just like a huge tangle of wires. That's exactly what that intersection looks like now. There you go. There's your Art Fern reference for the day. Here's Don Taylor.
An 81-year-old man was killed when he was trapped beneath a riding lawnmower at his home in Fayette County, Pennsylvania. Police said the man, identified as Elmer Slonicker, was riding up a hill Monday on Franklin Road when the mower rolled over. His death has been ruled an accident. Slonicker was found underneath the tractor mower by one of his daughters, Mindy Herbel. I stopped the car, and I'm looking, and his arm is sticking out, and I just started hollering and screaming and blowing on the horn, she said. Channel 4 Action News' Sheldon Ingram spoke Tuesday with Slonicker's three daughters and a friend named Polly Hart. They described Slonicker as a great person and a hard worker. He was nice to everybody. Everybody liked him. He was always doing things for everybody. He was that kind of guy.
There's a joke here about being half in the bag, but I'm not going to make that joke.
Slonicker was also very stubborn, according to his daughters, and refused the repeated requests to stop using the riding mower on his hilly property, where they said the machine had already rolled on several occasions. We've offered to do so many things for him, and he wanted to do it himself. He didn't want to bother anyone. The family told Ingram that the mower got stuck at the base of the hill, and Elmer Slonicker went to the top and tied a rope to a second mower and tried to hoist the first one up, but the upper mower apparently slipped and rolled down the hill with him on it.
Okay, this is now... Okay, we're going to revisit this then next hour as a Darwin Watch officially, because that's...
Now, I believe we have... You have some happy music that somewhere in your thing. Do you? That I could... Well, because I have tips here on mowing safety.
Well, let me see here. I believe I do. Let me give me just one okay. Second. And what is his last name? Slonicker?
Slonicker.
That's one of those... And Elmer. Elmer's one of those names that really needs to make a comeback. I'd be a big fan of that name coming back now.
Name of my imaginary friend when I was a little kid.
Slonicker? Really?
Yes, Slonicker. No, Elmer.
Oh, okay. I was going to say that's a weird little kid. All right, let me just... Are these lawnmower safety tips?
These are lawnmower safety tips.
Okay, here's lawnmower safety tips from Don Taylor.
Some things to remember when mowing your lawn so you won't be killed by, like Elmer Slonicker. Wear non-slip shoes for traction. Walk the lawn and pick up any rocks, sticks, or other items that can become projectiles. When using a riding mower, always mow slopes up and down so the tractor won't tip sideways and roll over on you and kill you, like Elmer Slonicker. When using a hand mower, mow the slopes across for better footing.
There you go. These are how not to be killed by your lawnmower tips, courtesy of Legion of News. Don't forget, Legion of News is archived every day at iTunes. You can also hear it right here at pdx.fm in archived form and at legionofnews.com. Coming up at 1 o'clock today over at rickemerson.com, the Rick Emerson radio program will be having a Geek Watch, Taser Watch, a Job Watch, a Darwin Watch now, apparently, and so forth. Plus, we'll discuss... Yeah, have you seen the movie trailer I'm talking about? The one that Cheryl sent it.
I didn't actually get a chance to watch it.
Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so glad you haven't watched it because you're going to watch it live on the air.
Okay.
It's bad. It's bad. It's so bad. It's bad like nothing has ever been bad. It
worse than that 3D Yogi Bear trailer they're showing right now?
Well, see, but the thing is, yes.
So that's pretty bad.
Yes, yes, it's worse than that. It's so jaw-droppingly bad.
Oh, by the way, I don't know if you read this. Just speaking of the Yogi Bear thing, I was going to mention this. There's a new ad campaign for it that shows the big face of Boo Boo with the big face of Yogi right behind him, and it says Yogi Bear 3D. And at the bottom of it, the tagline is, "Good things come in bears."
That was somebody's last day at the graphic arts department, and they decided to have a little bit of fun on the way out the door. That's what that was. Ian, I thought you were going to be much more. I thought it was going to be edgy but innocuous, like a sort of a. I thought it was some sort of a homosexual reference, like with the bears. You know, who doesn't love a bear? Or you know, for bear lovers everywhere.
No, it's just it's
good
just,
things come in bears. Really,
good things come in bears. But then pair that with the picture of
him
looks
behind,
like,
of him rogering Boo Boo.
Right, kind of, yeah. It's unfortunate, and I think it's completely inadvertent.
Yeah,
but it's unfortunate.
Maybe it's hard to say. I am astounded sometimes by the taglines that escape ad agencies. You know where they and we've talked about the thing with the McDonald's with the I'd hit it thing with the cheeseburger.
Yes,
but you know, I almost don't even want to say this one on the air. But I remember the. This is not really the same thing because it's not a kids' movie. But I remember the sequel to what was it? Was it Dumb and Dumberer? Was that the sequel?
Yeah, dumb. Yeah.
And they used the tagline for Dumb and. Do you remember the tagline for Dumb and Dumberer?
No.
It was. This is embarrassing even to say out loud. Actually, the tagline for Dumb and Dumberer was at least the one they showed in the theater, and there was always this awkward moment that happened after. Well, we should actually wait. I'm gonna wait. But see, here's the thing. We have to remember this because.
Okay.
I'm going to go write it on the board.
Go write it on
All right.
the board.
You just,
I'll read a story that doesn't involve you
tank.
Doing anything, and
down.
Then right. and you go write that. Right. A 40-year-old woman caught by the tide while hiking on the Oregon coast spent hours trapped 100 feet above the Pacific before rescuers pulled her up the face of a cliff to safety. Clatsop County Sheriff Tom Bergen and Lisa Donnelly of Alpharetta, Georgia, hoped to get a good view of Tillamook Head Lighthouse when she set out on her hike. But the incoming tide forced them to scramble as far up Tillamook Head as she could Wednesday afternoon. She used a cell phone to call a friend who alerted authorities. Heavy fog forced a Coast Guard helicopter to abandon its rescue effort, so two local search and rescue volunteers rappelled 1,000 feet down the face of Tillamook Head and stayed with her Wednesday night. Crews pulled Donnelly to the top of the cliff Thursday morning. She checked into a seaside hospital but left with no apparent injuries. All done writing?
Yes, yes, I am.
Okay. President Barack Obama delivered a speech to the AFL-CIO about the economic recovery today. Mr. Obama also touched on workplace safety.
What is this?
Workplace.
Is this just called workplace?
Yes.
Is this from yesterday?
Could be.
I think this this sound might actually be from many, many, many days ago. Let me look. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can find this here.
That was why I gave you the ones that I had before, so you could.
You know, there's no need to be snarky.
I'm
Tom.
Not being snarky.
All right.
I'm just saying.
Appointed folks.
Folks.
Actually,
hey, it's your favorite word. We had to have
hey
some
folks.
Sort of.
It's a drinking game.
Seriously, I don't know why we never. You know, it was so easy to do a W drinking game. I know why we never put one together for Obama, but now we can.
I've appointed folks. Who actually are fulfilling their responsibilities to make sure our workplaces are safe, whether in a mine or in an office, a factory, or any place else. And we are going to keep on fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act.
I think the president is asking you folks, sort of between the lines, not to shoot your coworkers. I think when he says in the office, that is code for please don't go nuts and kill the guy across from you by shooting him in the face. What is this next cut called?
This is called Jobs.
Jobs.
Obama told members he remains confident about the country's economic future and that we'll continue to compete with other countries for jobs for U.S. workers.
We don't really compete with jobs, with other countries for jobs. We just give them the jobs. We just send the jobs to them.
The United States doesn't play for second place. As long as I'm president.
No.
I'm just going to brace myself for a second before
we give 110%, Rick Emerson.
We play the game we know we can play.
It's a game of inches.
Right. Because those guys didn't come to dance.
The United States doesn't play for second place. As long as I'm president, I'm going to keep fighting night and day to make sure that we win those jobs, that those are jobs are created right here in the United States of America, and that your members are put to work.
How are we winning those jobs? Are we? Is there some
hurrah!
Gig? Are we bidding on something somewhere?
Hurrah!
Is there some sort of an international project somewhere where we've got to get our bid in by noon to try to win the job? There is no winning the job. There is just like not taking the job and shipping it off to Indonesia. I mean, that's really what he's talking about.
I'm not going to go back on this whole liberal conservative tariff thing or anything like that. But
you know you want to.
Do we really need to be competing with other countries for jobs for U.S. workers? Can't we just say, hey, people in the U.S., hey, companies that are based in the U.S., why don't you do business here and hire?
Are you really asking
here?
Me this?
No.
Because if you really ask me, then I'm going to have to really answer. And then
we'll both sound like idiots because we're not economists.
No, it's not even that. It's just that it's either a free market or it's not. That's the thing. The problem is that I was talking to Laura about this the other day. I was saying that how brilliant China was. This is actually the thing that I was saying. That I was talking about the brilliance of China and why China is at the current rate. This is why I can never be president, because I say things that at the current rate, China is just, you know, they're going to outstrip us in every way, because the really brilliant thing about China and the way that they behave economically, at least from what I, this is from my vague sort of somewhat above layman, but certainly far below expert sort of assessment of this and what I know of it, is that while China itself is not a free market system, obviously, in other words, you go over there, if you are Chinese, if you're a citizen of China, you know, it's obviously not a thing where you can just start up your business and run it with minimal interference. Being a communist state, this is not the way it works. However, the actual government of China, they do operate in a free market system. In other words, they realize that they've got Americans, you know, by the short hairs in many ways, because they create products that they have created cheaply, and that therefore, they can sell at a massive
labor and all.
Exactly, at a massive profit. So the government of China actually does behave exactly like a capitalist country. And they're able to do that even more effectively because no one but the government is allowed to behave like a capitalist. In other words, if the workers in China, if the people and the citizens of China could behave as capitalists, like a free market system, the government would not be able to, because the government would not have such a massive supply of cheap or free labor creating cheap goods that they could sell to us. So they've got the best of both worlds. They've got a dictatorial system toward their workers, but then they have a capitalist interaction with the rest of the world. And I mean, that really is like the killer combination, no pun intended. That's absolutely the right way to do it if you want to become a superpower. So, I mean, my hat's off to you. I just ask, just give me a job at some point. That's all. Just when you inevitably come over here and just sort of take everything over, just remember Rick Emerson wet his beak. That's all he wants.
And meanwhile, here in America, it costs $120 to sell 50-cent cups of lemonade.
It's
absurd.
It's exactly what it is, Don. All right, so forth. Did I finish playing this cut at all? Probably not.
One about the jibs?
The biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
You know, can I just say there's this guy who's taken to emailing me all kinds of different fictitious contexts into which I could put this this guy from NASA. It was the one he sent me last night. William Borucki is this guy's name, this NASA scientist. And so this listener last night sent me a whole series of sort of lead-ups that I could give this soundbite. One of them would be like, so when we asked Judge William Borucki what his thoughts were on the newest crop of contestants for this year's America's Next Top Model, he had this to say.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
Which is funny for reasons I can't quite quantify. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our science news, shall we?
It's time for Science on the March. Right here at Legion of News. It is Friday, and hello to you.
Our personalities stay pretty much the same throughout our lives, from our early childhood years to after we're older, over the hill, according to a new study.
The best part is you had to put in your glasses to read the story.
Ha! The results show personality traits observed in children as young as first graders are a strong predictor of adult behavior. We remain recognizably the same person, said study author Christopher Nave, a doctoral candidate at the University of California, Riverside. This speaks to the importance of understanding personality because it does follow us wherever we go across time and contexts. The study will be published in an upcoming issue of the journal Social, Psychological, and Personality Science.
I think everybody knew this. This just means if a guy's a dick when he's in first grade, he'll probably be a dick when he's an adult, and he'll have dickish kids of his own.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, that's it.
Using data from a 1960s study of approximately 2,400 ethnically diverse school children, grades 1 through 6, in Hawaii, researchers compared teacher personality ratings of the students with videotape interviews of 144 of those individuals 40 years later. They examined four personality attributes: talkativeness, adaptability, impulsiveness, and self-minimizing behavior.
What does that mean?
That's being humble to the point of minimizing one's importance.
Ah, I see.
Among the findings, talkative youngsters tended to show interest in intellectual matters, speak fluently, try to control situations, and exhibit a high degree of intelligence as adults. Children who were rated low in verbal fluency were observed as adults to seek advice, give up when faced with obstacles, and exhibit an awkward interpersonal style. Children rated as highly adaptable tended as middle-aged adults to behave cheerfully, speak fluently, and show interest in intellectual matters.
Wait, so are you doing that? Are you trying to figure out which one of these you are as you read all of these?
No, I think I'm probably the talkative one.
Yeah, but I'm the talkative. But see, I was just thinking that...
Okay, actually, how about this one? Students rated as impulsive were inclined to speak loudly, display a wide range of interests, and be talkative as adults.
And does it, see, if I could do that and then have a side of awkward social interaction, then that would be completely accurate. You're gesticulating at your computer as though you're expecting it to...
I have to reboot it. Apparently my...
Are you telling me again that Windows 7, because I was to understand that that was a flawless operating system.
No, I think what happened is that I somehow came unplugged from the wall, and so my battery died. And so.
Okay.
Anyway, that doesn't matter. Anyway, personality is a part of us, a part of our biology. Life events still influence our behaviors, yet we must acknowledge the power of personality in understanding future behavior as well.
We need to look for these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really planets and which aren't.
You know, the thing about this William Borowiecki cut is that he sounds like someone... apart from the guy who isn't Aaron Eckhart in The Company of Men, he sounds like somebody else, and I can't quite put my finger on who it is, but every time I play this, and in no matter what context, it's just as good as the first time. This soundbite, in fact, I think it actually, the quality of this and the amusement value actually improves every single time I play it.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates.
Right there. It's just a little quaver at the beginning there that just puts us off on the right foot. You are listening to Legion of News. Is this still Science on the March?
I believe so. I was looking to see if we had some sound
now,
regarding the BP.
I'm intrigued.
Thing.
You just put your glasses on to read that story, but now you've just taken them off again.
Well, yeah, because that...
Was it the size of the print?
Yes.
So it was just the size of the type for that one story.
Right, it was
all
very
right.
Small.
Okay, just checking.
I'm not completely blind.
No, I wasn't accusing you of being completely blind. There's no need to be defensive and impulsive, Don.
Plus, they're for reading, so when I look up at you across the table, you're all out of focus and blurry. I can't see you when I have my glasses on.
What if it was just actually that I was out of focus and blurry? What if really just my structure was ill-defined?
You like in Jacob's Ladder, you're just zicking back and forth and just sort of out of focus.
Yes, that's good. I was going to go the deconstructing. I was going to go the deconstructing Harry reference, but also Jacob's Ladder. I could get that. All right, here's Science on the March, continuing now at Legion of News.
BP said Friday it may someday drill again into the same lucrative undersea pocket of oil that spilled millions of gallons of crude, wrecked livelihoods, and fouled beaches along the Gulf of Mexico.
It doesn't really sound like MacArthur saying he shall return, does it?
There's lots of oil and gas here, Chief Operating Officer Doug Suttle
it's
said
everywhere.
In a news briefing. We're going to have to think about what to do with that at some point. The vast oil reservoir beneath the blown well is still believed to hold nearly $4 billion worth of crude. With the company and its partners facing tens of billions of dollars in liabilities, the incentive to exploit the wells and the reservoir could grow. Suttles has spent more than 3 months managing BP's response efforts in the Gulf, but is now returning to his day job in Houston, the company said.
Can I just make an observation? I know that I am sometimes accused of being reflexively cynical or being bleak or pessimistic, you know, about things such as environmentalism or preservation or recycling or whatever. I really honestly don't do that just to be obnoxious. It's just it is a worldview that I have arrived at for whatever reason in my life, but that I find is reinforced and justified every single day when I hear something like this. This quote that you just read here, where they can't, you know, there's all this oil down there, and I mean, what could possibly go wrong? We have to come back and try to get it again at some point because, you know, I mean...
Because we owe all this money now.
Because we owe all this money from destroying this joint the last time we tried to get the oil out of there, which, by the way, follows the time in, like, 1978 when they destroyed everything trying to get the oil out of there. This is why I don't care whether I get a paper or plastic bag, because... That guy, no matter what anybody does, no matter what anybody says, no matter how blatantly stupid of an idea it may be, they're just going to go back and keep doing it over and over and over again. And it's, you know, they're just like Homer Simpson reaching into the deep fryer to get his car keys. I mean, there's just nothing you can do to cure that stupid. So, you know, it doesn't, you know, this is why I don't care what kind of light bulb I have in my office at home. It doesn't really matter.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying that guy, it is sort of like, he's sort of a reverse sin eater. And a sin eater was this thing that they had in the medieval ages. Mm-hmm. And a sin eater would come, if you had a relative who was dying, a sin eater, the Catholics believe, would come to your house and you would feed him all of your best food, all of your best wine, all of your best everything. You would feed him all of the finest foods from your cupboard. And as he ate, it was really a great scam if you're the guy.
Oh, yeah.
And
good
as
job.
The sin eater would consume all your food, he was also consuming the sins somehow of your deceased or your dying loved one. And so he would leave the house satiated and very full and stuffed and drunk or whatever. Your relative would go to heaven, but that's because the sin eater had consumed all of his sin. Now, of course, the downside was that when he died, his soul was irredeemable. So this, the BP guy is sort of a reverse sin eater in that it doesn't matter whether you drive a Prius or not, because that guy's going to spill 500 billion gallons of oil into a dolphin sanctuary at some point. Whatever it is you do to make the world a better place is going to be counteracted times like 1,000 by that guy. So there is no point to you going and, you know, saying, no, I better take this can and put it in the blue tub instead of the yellow tub. Doesn't matter, because of that guy, specifically him.
You seem exceptionally unhappy today.
I'm not unhappy. I'm not unhappy. You know, you say that trying to put me in a bad mood is the thing. You say that and it's like you are Beetlejuicing it. You're saying it hoping that it becomes true. You don't want me to be in a good mood.
Why would I not want you to be in a good mood?
Because you're a hateful person.
Well, there is that.
I'm just guessing. I'm not saying that's the reason. I'm trying to figure out why. I would say that I am happier, perhaps, than the average person, because I have a more realistic and balanced worldview of things. I no longer cling to hurtful illusions, Don.
Aren't them?
I'm just saying.
Okay. Well, that's all our science news.
All right, there you go. There's Science on the March, Friday, right here on the. I'm like it. You know what it is? I'm like a less intelligent, less interesting, less drunk Christopher Hitchens.
Speaking of which...
Less British. Less filled with cancer.
Speaking of Christopher Hitchens...
Yes.
He is well known, you know, for his intelligence and combative wit.
Yes, he is.
2 months ago, while promoting his latest memoir, Hitch 22, he was diagnosed with cancer of the esophagus. An outspoken atheist, Hitchens says he hasn't prayed or changed his beliefs because of his illness.
I haven't wept at any point yet. Maybe that's to come. But I've become moist when I think about my children, for whom it's a nasty shock.
So Hitch 22, I actually didn't even quote catch, end quote, that mm-hmm. reference until the second time, because I read a little blurb about this last night, actually, that he's got the esophageal, which sucks. That is one of those things we realize, is that there is a God. You know, he's really just nuts. And I would say, not without a sense of cruel irony, the idea that, you know, that guy would get cancer of the esophagus.
It is beatable, though. My good friend Doug Holm, D.K. Holm, a local film critic, he battled it a year or so ago. He had to have operations and chemo and that sort of thing. And he is now hopping around, and his voice is back to... its full rich goodness.
There's so much. Cancer is just such a freaky thing. I mean, I know it sounds like a big understatement, but it's just. But on the one hand, cancer seems pretty simple because it's just cells that grow out of control, and they're your own cells. It's not like it's even a foreign. It's not like it's even a foreign body or a foreign entity. Like it's actually stuff from you that just doesn't want to switch off.
Right.
But on the other hand, It just it seems unbelievably complex. Because, I mean, it must be, because otherwise it seems like they could just cut it out. They just cut it out. And, you know, like if you got appendicitis, they just take out your appendix. So it seems like if you have cancer, and obviously they can't. I mean, I don't mean to sound naive about this. I'm just saying it seems as though if you got a, you know, like if you got a bad ear, they take off your ear. You got a bad appendix, they take out the appendix. Tonsil, take out the tonsil. It's just really, it's frustrating that they just like they can like see the cancer and they can't just go like, we're just going to take it out with an ice cream scoop and then you're done. You know, that's just one of those things where it's and the F thing about cancer is that it is like your own immune system that just decides to kill you. You know your own body. Hey, we're tired of being alive. Let's have some death. And then it just everything spirals out of control. It's just a freaky.
Well, Hitchens, who is an atheist, told CNN's Anderson Cooper his beliefs haven't changed after, you know, now that he has cancer, but he tells people that if praying for him makes them feel better, they should go ahead.
There are people who are praying for me to suffer and die. They have lavish websites relishing mine. And then there are people, much more numerous, I must say, who are praying either that I get better or that I redeem myself.
So there you go. I missed him when he was here, I guess, last December, maybe? Last November?
Yeah.
It wasn't at Powell's. It was at the Keller or something. He came in. He was reading from... it wasn't his God Is Not Great book. It was... Boy, did you read that? Did you read God Is Not Great?
No, I didn't.
I got about a chapter. Well, first of all, he's just the most, like, fiendishly intelligent guy, and the book was just so densely written, by which I mean you would have to read, and Tim Riley is the one who lent that to me, and he told me, he's like, you'll have to read every sentence, like, five times. He's way too smart. And it was like every paragraph was like ingesting one of those MREs for the military. It's like 7,000 calories. You go, it's so hard to process, because it's so unbelievably verbose and intelligent that you're like, I can't quite get what he's saying here. And it's like you felt like you had to do. I felt like I had to go read, read like Kafka or something just to bone up like my sort of my cognitive muscles before reading Hitchens. So it was a great book. That I actually didn't read much of, because for the same reason that I haven't read, the same reason people can quit sending me Richard Dawkins books, because it's like reading books by atheists is like watching really elaborate porn. You know, I get it. I understand what you're saying. There is no God. People who think there's a God, you know, are dumb. And then it's just sort of repeat for 500 pages. So that being said, you read any of Hitchens' other stuff? It's just fantastic. He really is just an amazing writer. He reminds me a lot of Tony Hendra. If you know Tony, he has a very similar writing style to Tony Hendra in some ways. Not as overtly comedic, a little more dry, but it's quite good. You're listening to Legion of News, by the way, which is brought to you by many fine folk. Including Michael Beatty. Michael Beatty is the proprietor of a Portland company called The Cleaning Solution. It's 971-533-3211. That's the number you get a hold of him, 971-533-3211. And you might want to contact him if you've got residential or commercial cleaning needs. If you have, let's say, a car, the floorboards of which are apparently filled with stale milk, which begins to stink up the entire joint every time the sun comes out. Have you actually asked him about that?
No, I haven't. Although I have thought about giving him a call to talk to him about my apartment, because my dog is getting older, and so she's... And when dogs get older...
Bladder.
No, it's not even that. It's just when dogs get older, they start to get stinkier. You know, if you've ever noticed that, some dogs, they just smell more and more often. And this summer has been particularly, like, warm for her in the apartment, and she's been kind of itchy, and so she keeps like rubbing her head on
the
carpet.
She gets the dog smell everywhere.
Yeah, and just the whole apartment just smells of dog. And I've tried sprinkling the powdered sprinkly stuff and vacuuming, and I need to get the carpets clean because everything just smells of dog.
See, okay, so I'm glad I'm not the only one that has the dog issue, because I got this the dog Max. I'm not going to go on and on about my dog. I'm just going to say that he is very well trained. The family, because we got him when he was he's already a few years old, and the family that had him actually did a really 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 good job of training him, but every now and again he'll just get overly possessive of some particular object, and then what do dogs do when they get overly possessive is they will a little bit of whiz on it or something to mark it as like property of Max, and so there is, and fortunately it's on linoleum, but there's like one like sort of a like small metal trash tin in the kitchen, and every now and again you just walk and you'll be like, and you can immediately just tell. You're like, okay, that's, and then there's no reasoning with him. because he just uses these circular arguments that go nowhere, and it just ends up being this sort of soporific thing that you can't ever really penetrate, and then we agree to disagree, and whatever. But the point is, if you want to get your house clean so it doesn't have a weird funk going on, there's no stains on the carpet, you just call Michael Beatty at The Cleaning Solution, 971-533-3211, 971-533-3211. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday.
A judge has granted Sandra Bullock a 3-year restraining order against a man who has a history of stalking her and allegedly traveled cross-country to try and meet the actress after being released from a mental hospital. Thomas James Weldon was ordered to refrain from trying to contact the actress or Louis Bardo Bullock, an infant boy that the Academy Award winner is in the process of adopting. The restraining order also protects the children of Bullock's ex-husband Jesse James. The children occasionally stay with Bullock. Bullock first obtained a restraining order against Weldon in 2003. The order was extended but expired last year because Weldon was being held in a Tennessee mental hospital. After his release earlier this year, he traveled to Wyoming in an alleged attempt to meet her, according to Bullock's attorney, Ed McPherson. Weldon was committed indefinitely to a state mental hospital in Wyoming on Tuesday. It's obvious that this fixation on her has not changed, McPherson said, despite 7 years in the hospital in Tennessee. Bullock did not attend Friday's hearing.
The weird thing is, I mean, not that she's not a nice person at all, but who? I always wonder why people latch on to particular celebrities like that. Like, why Sandra Bullock? I can see almost David Letterman because he's sort of, he's famous in a more prominent way, I think, than she is. And, whatever. But Sandra Bullock just seems, she seems a little bland to be stalking, is my point. She doesn't really seem like somebody who has any she doesn't seem to have a specific personality trait that a stalker would latch onto. Unless maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's because she's America's sweetheart. Maybe it's because she seems so approachable. All right. Well, there you go. So there's that.
Emma Watson, the 20-year-old British actress who portrayed Harry Potter's best friend Hermione Granger.
She's 20?
Yes.
Did we skip over the whole thing when she turned 18?
They've been making those movies for like 10 years, yeah.
That's a guy thing. Normally, there's some sort of a moment of silence or something, or like a moment of national acknowledgement.
You missed it.
Damn. All right.
Has chopped off her character's long hair in favor of a short pixie cut. Oh my God, it was the most liberating thing, she told Entertainment Weekly. The stylist just grabbed the back of my hair and took a whole ponytail of hair out. It felt amazing. I love it. The cut might not seem like a big deal to most 20-year-olds, but Watson has had to have the same hairstyle for 10 years while playing Hermione Granger.
I hadn't thought about that.
I missed all that experimentation that most teenagers go through, she said. I've wanted to do this since I was about 16, so as soon as I had the chance, I was like, right, this is it. Watson is a sophomore at Brown University and finished shooting the final two Potter movies this summer.
Don't worry, you can still experiment in college, Emma.
There's a picture of her with her short little hair.
Hold on a second. Oh, hello.
She is very pretty.
She looks like Twiggy.
A little bit.
I mean, that's just, I'm a fan. I am a fan of this. As much as short hair on chicks normally looks bad. Well, I think she's just, first of all, she's just, she's cute as a button, is what she is. And she's 20, so I can now officially say that she's hot as well. All right. Well, there you go. Who actually has not turned out to be that weird looking is that guy that plays Ron Weasley.
Yeah, I know. He was not an attractive young boy, but he's kind of a nice looking young man.
He's not traditionally handsome, maybe in the way that what's his name Daniel Radcliffe is. Yeah. But Daniel Radcliffe is also good looking in kind of a boring way.
Yeah.
The Ron Weasley guy, I think he's sort of come into his, he's grown into his face, as somebody once said to me. All right, well there you go. So Emma Watson from Harry Potter is short haired and 20. Just FYI. All right.
Rapper turned underwear model turned Oscar-nominated actor Mark Wahlberg has been enshrined in the Hollywood Walk of Fame. The 39-year-old actor was presented with his star Thursday on Hollywood Boulevard's fame-signed walk monument. Will Ferrell, who stars with Wahlberg in the action comedy The Other Guys, which I'm sure is completely coincidental to the fact that he got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Well, don't you buy those?
Yes.
I mean, that's the thing. Like,
yeah, no, you. Well, you go to the committee and you say, we want one. And you're willing to pay for it, and they decide if you will. But it's almost always anymore in conjunction with some kind of a project.
Does Ed Wood have one?
I believe he does, yes.
Really? I was trying to think of somebody that we could do, that we could raise money to get them a star in the Walk of Fame.
Donnie Most.
No.
Adam. Will Ferrell was on hand for the ceremony. He said, "I'm glad to be here. I first became a fan of Mark's when I bought his workout video, and I love all your Bourne movies." The Bourne film star, Matt Damon.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Mark. Right. That's why it's funny.
Okay.
Anyway. New on TV tonight, there's a new episode of Wife Swap, in which a driven conservative family of gymnasts swap with a freewheeling family that enjoy kickball and karaoke.
At what point does Wife Swap become indistinguishable from that 30 Days show with Morgan Spurlock? I mean, it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically the, you know, she's a Mormon and she'll be living with some gay folk for 30 days. Yeah. I'm Morgan Spurlock.
Right. On Say Yes to the Dress, Atlanta, Carl wants a simple and conservative wedding gown. Carl? Maybe that says Carrie. Wants a simple and conservative wedding gown, but her mother would rather see her in something sexy. Dita has expensive taste, but doesn't fit her frugal mom's small budget.
I'm sorry, I'm back on the mom wanting to see her daughter in something sexy.
Yeah. Her mom thinks she should wear something sexy.
Well, okay. Who can disagree?
And that's pretty much it for TV tonight. It's not a good night for TV. Should go out and do something else.
There you go. Let's do one more non-entertainment story here, and then we'll just sort of bring the curtain down on this whole thing. And don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock today. We'll be talking about we have a Geek Watch, Taser Watch, Job Watch. I'll revisit this business of the tagline that we didn't quite get to. Let's see what else. I have the worst movie trailer. And if you've been on the net, like, at all, at any point in the last day, you've probably seen this. I mean, they're probably force-feeding it to people now at this point. They're coming to your home and, you know, making you watch it at gunpoint. Because as I understand it, the studio is really desperately trying to get it, like, off the internet, which always works out. So, anyways, but I've got it. I made sure to download it and, like, save it and file it away. So that is, as soon as something, whenever anything leaks, I immediately save it in ARC, even if it's something I don't want. Just the idea that, like, a studio doesn't want me to see it is enough to get me to save it forever and to make backup copies, go into a vault somewhere. So we'll do that and so forth. Let's do one more. That's at rickemerson.com, 1 o'clock. Let's do one more here before we end it.
Well, speaking of doing something else this weekend, the Bite of Oregon begins this week, today, and continues through the weekend. Nearly 40,000 attendees will eat, drink wine, drink beer, wander around Waterfront Park, sweat,
vomit,
annoy each other. There'll be a dessert pavilion, a Portland food cart area, because we're all about the food carts these days.
It's because, well, no, the idea that there's a Portland food cart area so that they can actually now charge people to get in to then purchase things at food carts, which exist solely to serve people who don't want to spend a lot of money to get their lunch.
Right.
Well done, Portland.
There'll be an Iron Chef Oregon competition. A craft beer garden, live music and entertainment, and Brian Boitano will be on hand because he's got a Food Network show now called What Would Brian Boitano Make?
What is a craft beer?
They used to call them microbrews, but
are
I think
they're
calling
the
them
thing?
Craft beers now. Yeah.
Okay, so craft beer and a microbrew are the same thing.
Craft beer, it's one of those words like artisan. It basically means, you know, it's not made by a big corporation.
Not made by the man. Not made by an oligarchy.
Also appearing on Cisco's Oregon Chef stage is Bravo Network's top chef, Dave Martin. When not on television, Dave teaches cooking classes across the nation and has authored many cookbooks, including Flavor Quest and his bestseller, Black Truffle Mac and Cheese.
When you say Cisco.
Cisco. Cisco, the food service company, not the computer company.
No, okay, I was also wondering if it was Cisco, the man behind the thong song.
No, Cisco, S-Y-S-C-O.
Got it.
Is a food purveyor right. That
three different ways we could have gone there. All right. Well, and there you go. Legion of News, brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.FM. And originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill. Executive producer is Bruce Agler. Our chief of staff is Cheryl Kenakoa. Don't forget, this program will be archived at iTunes as well as here at PDX.FM and LegionofNews.com. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at RickEmerson.com. If you are not subscribing and listening, you're an awful person and will die poor and alone. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News. on PDX.fm.